Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly. I'm Allison Kaplan-Summer in Tel Aviv. Usually, when Israel is caught up in conflict and violence at home, as it has been for more than 3 weeks since the war in Gaza broke out, it has little bandwidth to pay attention to the effect events here are having overseas. But the level of conflict on American campuses, the shocking rhetoric being used, the level of fear that Jewish students at universities are feeling, and what this says about progressive America and the position of Israel in the Democratic Party has been powerful enough to garner headlines on Israeli newscasts, even as the war rages on in Gaza. Israelis are worried about their brethren in the diaspora, even as they fight at home. It feels different and very serious this time, even to Israelis. American Jewish voices, like actress Mayim Bialik, who identifies as a liberal Zionist, posted a long emotional video on social media platforms confessing to a fundamental identity crisis.
I've always believed that Israel was my homeland, and now I understand it more deeply than ever before. I am a stranger in a strange land here, and it took October 7th for so many of us to see that. I'm scared to send my child to school events right now. I'm scared to think about what he will meet when he goes to college. I'm scared that he has to think twice before writing an essay about how significant it is to be a liberal Jew in America and all of the things that we have fought for the dignity of other groups, for self-determination, for the right to live. Am Chofshi.
Here with us to talk about it all from the front lines on campus of the University of California at Los Angeles is Professor Dov Waxman. He's a professor of Israel Studies at UCLA and the director of the university's Nazarian Center for Israel Studies. Later in the podcast, we'll hear from Haaretz New York correspondent Judy Maltz, who has been covering the conflicts on campus over the past 3 weeks for Haaretz.com. I'll ask both of them, after October 7th, will being Jewish on campus and will being a politically engaged liberal or progressive Jew in America ever feel the same again? Professor Waxman, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
So you're here in the dual role as someone who is on the ground, on a campus in America, and at the same time, an expert on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, on the relationship between America and Israel as regards the conflict and beyond, and on anti-Semitism. So first, wearing your hat of a UCLA professor, we just listened to part of a video by the actress Mayim Bialik, who actually got her PhD at UCLA. She references the university in her video, saying, "It is clear there is a strain of anti-Semitism that is alive and well. It is thriving at my alma mater, UCLA, where the chant, 'We want a Jewish genocide,' was echoed in the quad in front of Royce Hall." What are you seeing and experiencing on the UCLA campus and across the California system as a whole?
Well, first of all, just to correct the claim that students were chanting for a Jewish genocide, that wasn't actually the case. What they were chanting for at the rally that took place on UCLA's campus was charging Israel with genocide. But certainly there were reports that the students were chanting, Jewish genocide. And I think the fact that these reports, which turned out to be untrue, were immediately seized upon by many and immediately believed by so many people is itself telling. I think it's indicative of the present state of high anxiety that exists about what's happening on campuses, particularly over the last few weeks. And I think there's some well-founded concern there, but I also think some of that is exaggerated. There's a lot of misinformation and sometimes disinformation circulating about what's really been happening on campuses, both regarding student protests and also actions by faculty members.
It's like the campus version of the fog of war, right?
Exactly. And it's often difficult for people who aren't on campus to really know what's going on. Obviously, they're relying upon media reports, and often they're relying upon reports or stories coming from advocacy groups. And there's a lot of advocacy groups that have existed for a long time now, focusing on what they call campus anti-Semitism, and really highlighting incidents which they claim purport to show this kind of pervasive anti-Semitic atmosphere on campus. And I think we have to be a bit skeptical sometimes about the messengers and what their agendas are when they're focusing on some of these incidents. So just to take the example of UCLA, yes, there has been very vocal and protests by a minority of students, led by the local chapter of the Students for Justice in Palestine, but also other student groups on campus who have been demonstrating on our campus in support of the Palestinians and in opposition to Israel's military operation, its war in Gaza. And that has indeed created a climate for Jewish students on campus in which many of them feel really uncomfortable, even fearful at the present time. And so there is a real issue there. But I think to suggest that, you know, students were calling for Jewish genocide kind of depicts these students as rabid anti-Semites. And I think actually, while the effect of their rhetoric and the effect of their activism may indeed and has sometimes led Jewish students to feel unwelcome or even harassed, that's not the same as saying these students are coming out and calling for genocide against Jews or anti-Semitic or making other anti-Semitic kinds of statements. So I think we have to distinguish between what the students themselves are calling for and doing and the effect of their actions, which may in effect end up being anti-Semitic in terms of its impact upon Jewish students. But many of the students themselves engaging in these protests aren't actually doing it out of any sort of animus or malice towards Jews.
But in these days of online rhetoric and a lot of it being anonymous, it's hard to draw the line. You know, there are the ones who are standing up and chanting things with signs, and then there's some terrible threatening things also going on these campus websites and billboards and other platforms. And it's a very tricky tightrope to walk between when do people feel physically threatened and when do they just feel as if people are vocally and forcefully expressing their views.
That's right. It's an important distinction. We often talk about, we use the language of safety now to refer not only to our physical safety and not feeling threatened by physical threats, but also a kind of emotional safety that many students also talk about. And so they may say that, you know, they're feeling unsafe by a protest that might be entirely peaceful, but the rhetoric at that protest may upset them, may disturb them. And so some students say that makes them feel unsafe. Similarly, they may say that, you know, learning or hearing certain claims in a classroom can make them feel unsafe. And I think we have to be careful about accepting the kind of expansion of the discourse of safety to all of these other areas. It's one thing for students to be confronted with ideas or viewpoints that may upset them, may disturb them, may make them feel uncomfortable. That's what happens on college campuses. There's nothing wrong with that. That's, in fact, what students should be experiencing is being challenged in their views and ideas. That's different from being made to feel physically unsafe or physically threatened. And that clearly crosses the line and is unacceptable. And what's happened over the last few weeks has been, both of these things, but it certainly have been incidents, most notably yesterday or over the weekend at Cornell University, where Jewish students were actually physically threatened with threats online of rape and murder. And they had to be told to kind of shelter in their rooms and they couldn't go to the kosher dining hall. That's clearly an anti-Semitic threat, no question about it. And that's clearly unacceptable. But that's different from, you know, a demonstration taking place, which may be offensive and you might take issue with some of those slogans, but that doesn't necessarily constitute a physical threat to Jewish students. And so both of these things are often kind of conflated into this broader narrative about Jewish students feeling under siege. And I think that narrative isn't entirely false, but I think it's often not really a fully accurate accurate picture of what's happening on college campuses.
Well, it's also a very politicized debate, which you've been thinking and writing about for many years, whether criticism of Israel on campus should or shouldn't be considered borderline anti-Semitic, whether anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. What we're looking at now, do you see the aftermath of October 7th and what we see today as any kind of milestone or paradigm shift? Do things feel different this time around than previous wars in Gaza, than previous rounds of debate about Israel's proportionality when it comes to a retaliation for bombing attacks back and forth, for actions in the West Bank and Gaza? Does this time feel different to you?
Yes. I mean, I've been teaching on college campuses for over two decades now, starting during the Second Intifada. And I've taught on different kinds of campuses and through all of Israel's various wars with Hamas and other escalations of Israeli-Palestinian violence. And the last few weeks has felt qualitatively different. It feels the atmosphere is different than anything I've experienced in the past. The tensions are greater. The animosity is greater. The fear is greater. You know, I've generally been of the opinion that a lot of the concern about anti-Semitism on college campus has in the past been exaggerated, in that although there has been incidents and there is some anti-Semitism on college campuses, as there is across American society as a whole, that it's generally not been accurate to describe college campuses as hotbeds of anti-Semitism or as so-called hostile environments for Jewish students. But over the last few weeks, I do think that some campuses have actually become hostile environments for Jewish students. And this is a new thing to my mind. And this, you know, really demonstrates, I think, the intense passions and furies that have been sparked, you know, all around the world in response to what's been happening in Israel and Gaza. So I do think we've entered a kind of new period. Whether this will continue beyond this war, we'll have to see. But I think there is a shift, and certainly there will be political consequences as a result of what's taking place. I think organizations who have been long pushing their agenda on campuses will really step up their efforts because of what's been taking place in recent weeks. On the question of anti-Zionism, yeah, I think, you know, I've generally been arguing for many years now that it's you know, grossly simplistic and reductionist to just conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, to say anti-Zionists are anti-Semitic or anti-Zionism is necessarily anti-Semitic. But what we have seen over the last few weeks are manifestations and expressions of anti-Zionism that are anti-Semitic. And I've never disputed the fact that anti-Zionism cannot sometimes be anti-Semitic, and that we've definitely seen that in recent weeks. And we've seen as well the consequences, I think, of a discourse on campus about Israel that has become so toxic, so one-sided, that for some students, and I think it's only a minority, but for some students, because they've come to see Israel in such a negative way, to see it as essentially this kind of secular colonial entity that has no right to exist, and have come to see all Israelis as effectively colonists and colonizers. So that's led them to somehow think it's acceptable or tolerable or defensible to slaughter innocent Israeli civilians. And that's really been something that myself and many of my colleagues have really been shocked by, the way some students have perceived Israel and the climate on campus has reached a point where students, if only a small minority, have come to see terrorism and see that and not able to identify that as terrorism.
So in terms of dealing with that small minority, the White House seems to have been noticing what's been going on. And this week, President Biden said he would unveil a series of measures aimed at addressing rising anti-Semitism on college campuses. Among them is the Department of Education Office for Civil Rights updating the process for discrimination complaints under the Civil Rights Act to specifically state that certain forms of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia are prohibited by this law, presumably making it easier for students who believe they're experiencing alleged discrimination or oppression to seek redress legally. Do you see this step as being helpful, or do you think it's just going to fan the flames higher?
Well, I think it all depends on how it's applied and what the Department of Education considers to be anti-Semitic speech or anti-Semitic behavior. I mean, this has been a long-running effort by pro-Israel groups and to basically use U.S. civil rights law to not only protect Jewish students from anti-Semitism, but in some cases also prevent or suppress pro-Palestinian advocacy on college campuses. And I think we have to be very careful. I think it's very important that Jewish students have their rights protected and that they can study and participate as equals in college. But we also have to ensure that in protecting the rights of Jewish students, we don't trample the rights of other students, you know, such as Palestinian American, Arab American, Muslim American students and others for whom, you know, protesting Israel's policies or actions and supporting the Palestinians is their right. So there's a real challenge here in recognizing that while Jewish students have absolutely every right to attend college and universities, go to classes free of harassment and intimidation, at the same time, the Israel-Palestine issue is a very live issue on college campuses. Students have strong opinions about that, and they have every right, as a matter of free speech, to protest those actions, even if we may disagree with those protests. And so I think the danger here is that there are pro-Israel advocacy groups, particularly on the right, who really want to label all kinds of activism or speech in support of the Palestinians as effectively anti-Semitic. And the argument that they've been using is that Zionism, an attachment to Israel, is a constitutive part or core element of Jewish identity, and therefore attacks against Zionism or criticism of Zionism effectively constitute attack against Jewish identity and against and are therefore anti-Semitic. So the effect of that is to then essentially say that any kind of anti-Zionist speech or action is effectively anti-Semitic. And in an age where anti-Zionist sentiment is growing across the United States, but especially among young people, I think that's a very dangerous kind of argument because it could end up seeking to, you know, ban or even criminalize expressions of anti-Zionism. And I think what we need to do is actually have a much more nuanced approach, which can distinguish between anti-Semitic expressions and non-anti-Semitic expressions, not necessarily say that, you know, any type of anti-Zionism is somehow anti-Semitic. And let's not forget there are some Jewish students themselves on college campuses who are themselves anti-Zionist. So it's also problematic to simply say that Zionism is a kind of constitutive element of every of the identity of every Jewish student.
Just to close off and wrap up, putting on again your political expert punditry hat, widening beyond the campuses, there was just a story in the New York Times stating that unity behind President Biden is beginning to erode over his support of Israel. Young voters, people of color, again, reflecting what's going on campuses, showing more discontent towards him than at any point since he was elected. The article describes it as a raw emotional divide. The Republican Party has been unsuccessfully trying to woo American Jews who are largely liberal for years. If what the Times is describing is true, do you see American Jews who are attached to Israel becoming political orphans, given that it seems like they are being pushed away by an increasingly less sympathetic to Israel Democratic Party and a Republican Party whose values they will never be able to fully identify with or embrace?
Not really, because I think, in fact, the overwhelming reaction of Democrats in Congress and across the United States has actually been very supportive of Israel. I mean, the Biden administration and the president himself has, you know, really gone above and beyond in expressing support for Israel and unequivocal condemnation of Hamas. So, you know, I think there's a lot of attention paid to the kind of the so-called squad in Congress and a smaller number of progressive Democrats who have become increasingly critical of Israel. But even many of those have actually, in response to October the 7th, come out and supported Israel. So I think the narrative that the Democratic Party is turning against Israel is, for one thing, it's politically driven. Obviously, it's in the interest of Republicans to drive that narrative, but it really doesn't represent what's really happening in the Democratic Party. Yes, there's growing partisan divide over Israel, but the Democrats, by and large, have not become anti-Israel. They're just not willing to give Israel a blank check. That doesn't make them anti-Israel. But I think, and I think most American Jews will actually deeply appreciate and do appreciate everything that the Biden administration have said and done over the last few weeks, and particularly President Biden's visit to Israel. So I don't think it's Jewish Americans who are going to feel alienated from the Democratic Party in this moment. If anything, it is Arab American voters and Muslim American voters for whom President Biden's kind of unequivocal and strong support for Israel and some of the, and his questioning about, for example, Palestinian casualty statistics in the Gaza Strip, and the, you know, his claim that maybe the statistics coming out of the Hamas-run Ministry of Health in Gaza are not reliable. Those kinds of statements have really upset Arab American and Muslim American voters. So I think they may feel, as the Democratic Party is still so solidly supportive of Israel, that they are politically homeless. They're not going to go to the Republican Party. American Jews, on the other hand, if anything, have seen in the last few weeks that for all that rhetoric about Democrats abandoning Israel, over the last few weeks, the Democratic Party has been very supportive of Israel and the vast majority of Democrats in Congress.
Professor Dove Waxman, UCLA, thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up after this, we'll move to the East Coast and hear about what's going on there from Haaretz New York correspondent Judy Maltz.
A surprise assault by land, sea, and air.
How are you going to get these hostages back?
The ruthless attack by Hamas has left us shaken.
The walls closing in, the floor opening under my feet, total insecurity.
Over the next few weeks, the Shalom Hartman Institute is launching a special series with Yossi Klein Halevi and Danielle Hartman as they reflect on the current war in Israel.
I have no vengeance in my heart and I have no anger. I just know that our life here in Israel is constantly this close to failure.
Listen to Israel at War at shalomhartman.org/ For Heaven's Sake or on the For Heaven's Sake podcast feed.
Haaretz New York correspondent Judy Maltz has been covering the conflicts on campus over the past 3 weeks, and she's here to tell us what she's seen and give us an overview. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Allison.
Judy, you're based in New York. You've been on the New York campuses, and you've also seen other demonstrations going on in New York City. What's been going on? What have you seen?
Well, there's a lot happening on these campuses. Basically, what we're seeing is the Israel-Hamas war spilling over onto these campuses. Lots and lots of protests. Often, you have both pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian groups holding protests side by side with barely, you know, a line of police officers separating them. Yesterday, I went to Brooklyn. I wanted to see this protest that was being sponsored by a group called Within Our Lifetime. It's a pro-Palestinian group based in New York City. And they had thousands of people marching from Crown Heights in Brooklyn, which, as you know, is a very, very Jewish neighborhood. It's where the Chabad movement is headquartered, and they marched across the Brooklyn Bridge to Lower Manhattan. I guess what would have been very disturbing for many Jewish people and certainly many Israelis was that this group standing in front of the group that was marching were people holding a sign that said, by any means necessary. In other words, resistance by any means necessary, which could easily be interpreted as justification for the Hamas, the very bloody Hamas attacks against innocent Israelis. I have to say it was not a violent march. It was pretty peaceful, but that may have to do with the fact that it was held on Shabbat afternoon. So there was no counter demonstration in the area, but still some of the messages that came through on the signs people were holding were extremely disturbing, calling for an intifada revolution, describing what was happening now as Zionist genocide. Of course, there were no calls there for the release of the Israeli hostages, no mention of them whatsoever. And it was pretty interesting to, that's why I went. I was interested in seeing who goes to these protests. It was a very, very diverse group, represented, I guess, by many of the groups that have been active in intersectionality. There were many Black people there, many of them holding signs alluding to George Floyd. I saw one woman carrying a sign that said, I cannot breathe. There were many holding signs that said queers for Palestine, and in not a small number of Jews, in fact.
So this was a student-based protest, or was it?
No, this was not students. This mm-hmm. was just New Yorkers. Although I would say that on the whole, it was made up of people in their 20s and 30s. And that actually goes well with the recent survey we've seen that shows that people in their 20s are far more likely to support Palestinians in this current war, are far more likely to be apologetic to Hamas, even if they describe Hamas actions as genocide. They support these actions. And this is a poll, I think, that came out last week that was done by some group at Harvard University.
A lot of the focus has been on the universities, on the campuses, and especially at the elite universities. Can we just rewind back to how things unfolded on October 7th when the Hamas attack against Israel took place? What was happening on campus? What was the initial reaction and the counter reaction, and how have things been developing since when it comes to places that we're hearing about here in Israel on the news, like Harvard, like Columbia, University of Pennsylvania?
So I think what triggered it was a statement that came out just a few days after October 7th by a group of 34 student groups at Harvard University, which blamed Israel exclusively for what happened. And it's really important to mention that both in this case and in the case of the big protest at Columbia, these events, the statement and this protest happened before Israel began its massive retaliation. So there was already this support for the Palestinian cause before there were any large number of Palestinians killed.
And is that what's different? Because we're used to attacks on Israel, Gaza, back and forth, debates, protests on campus. Israel is right. Hamas is right. And the shock that I see among progressive Jews in the United States, at least from here in Israel, I think is because the advocacy or taking the side of the Palestinians and even the side of Hamas began even before Israel did anything. And so that was a sign of perhaps support of what Hamas did on October 7th.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why so many people were so disturbed. For example, at the protests at Columbia University, it started out as a vigil that the Jewish students wanted to hold, a quiet vigil in support of the victims, those who had been killed and those who had been taken hostage. And just across the lawn on campus, the Palestinian group held a very, I would say it was like an enthusiastic sort of almost gleeful protest, very loud. I think the Jewish students were very disturbed. They had expected at least some empathy with what had happened to their people, and there was absolutely none of that.
And that's where we got some strong pro-Palestinian statements by faculty members at some of these universities that have gotten them in trouble, and what were perceived as insufficient and tepid responses from the administrations.
Yes, and not only that, but we've also seen a backlash now from donors who are stopping donations to some of these schools, most famously University of Pennsylvania, where some very key donors, by the way, not all of them Jewish, have announced that they're pulling out funding. And at Harvard, probably the most famous incident is that the Wexner Foundation has stopped their program there. And this is a program that's been going on for 30 years and brought in a lot of money to Harvard University.
And how are the administrations reacting to this kind of pressure? Are they changing their positions?
So a lot of them have kind of revised and resubmitted their statements on the situation, but none of these revisions have really been to the satisfaction of the donors in question. And some of them have just said that we're just not going to make any statements anymore.
And is there a backlash against, you know, some of the pressure from donors or the, you know, general pressure from the Jewish community on these campuses trying to get, I don't know, consequences against students and against faculty who are speaking out?
So far, I haven't heard anything public, but I imagine there is a lot of talk that here it is once again, Jews using their money to get what they want. And I'm sure this is stirring some anti-Semitism. But, you know, I think there's a difference there between those who are saying, look, this university no longer represents my values, or it's not the same university that I attended. So I feel no compulsion at this point to hand over my annual millions of dollars. And those who, for instance, at the University of Pennsylvania are saying, I won't give any money unless you fire the president, which is, in a way, I guess, could be considered some form of bullying.
A lot of these students have very worried parents. When you speak to students, Jewish students and also Palestinian Arab students, are people concerned about their personal safety? And I guess I'll throw in there also, you know, Jewish and Israeli faculty members. Is there a real concern about personal safety on campus, or is it a little bit overblown?
You know, I used to think that when there was talk of, you know, BDS on campus, that it's a big threat to Jewish students. I used to think that was overblown. And the truth is, if you look at surveys done even a few months ago, most Jewish students have no idea what BDS is. That has changed now. I really do think that Jewish students don't feel safe on campuses anymore, certainly the ones I've spoken to in the New York area. They don't feel safe walking around on campus with a yarmulke on their heads while, you know, students are out there holding the Palestinian flags, talking about the need to resist Zionist genocide by all means, in quotes. And so what I'm hearing from them is that, you know, they try to avoid campus as much as possible. They go to their classes and come back. They don't hang out, for example, at Columbia on College Walk on the steps as they might have in the past or on the lawn. It's just not comfortable anymore to be around that. Look, there is one case in Columbia, I don't know of others, of a Jewish student who was beaten up when he confronted somebody who was pulling down signs of the hostages. I don't know of other cases of physical violence, but it's not a comfortable atmosphere.
You reported on something happening at Cooper Union College where students were barricaded in the library?
Yeah. So this was on Thursday evening. Thursday was announced as a national walkout day by Students for Justice in Palestine, which is this national pro-Palestinian movement. And so students at several hundred campuses around the country had scheduled these walkouts in the afternoon, some at 12, some at 1, some at 3. And while they had walked out, were holding a protest outside of Cooper Union, there was a small group of Jewish students who were also holding a counter-protest there. And after the protests were over, the pro-Palestinian group, the students went into a building, climbed the steps, and started chanting Free Palestine from the river to the sea. And all those chants we've become very familiar with in the past few weeks. The Jewish students, not feeling very comfortable, decided to go in the into the library, which is on the first floor. And soon thereafter, the pro-Palestinian group came down and began banging on the wall, at which point security guards from the university surrounded it to protect the Jewish students inside, which was pretty serious, I think.
Judy, I know that you're very familiar with U.S. campus life. You spent time in a college town not that long ago. Is this different? Do you feel like something's changed on these campuses? And do you think that people who are Israeli, who are visibly Jewish, are going to now think twice when they're deciding which college to send their kids to, which college to attend? Has this been any kind of a turning point, a changing point, or is it kind of more of the same process that we've been seeing, you know, over the past decade or so?
No, I think this is definitely a turning point in terms of, first of all, the sheer numbers of students coming out. I think this is unprecedented. See, such large groups of students coming out. Like in Columbia, there were thousands, okay? And I also saw a very large number a week and a half ago in Washington Square Park by New York University. How many of these are students and how many of them are just other people joining in? It's hard to say. Columbia in the past few weeks has not allowed non-students and non-faculty onto the campus. So clearly at Columbia, it was all students. And also the type of things they're chanting. There's also something that happened at Tulane on Thursday, which was pretty scary. Tulane, as someone recently explained to me, has emerged in recent years as kind of what Brandeis used to be, kind of a safe school for Jewish students. For whatever reason, this university in New Orleans has this huge Jewish population. Someone told me about 40% Jewish. And it was a place where parents felt they could send their kids and, you know, they wouldn't have to deal with these sort of things. And what happens at Tulane? There was this pro-Palestinian demonstration on Thursday that got quite violent when some pro-Palestinian students driving by in a car with a Palestinian flag started burning an Israeli flag, and a Jewish student there tried to grab it away, and a fight broke out, and the Jewish student was beaten up. Now, that's Tulane, Allison. That's not Columbia. That's not Harvard. That's not Berkeley. So I am sure there are many parents asking themselves, what would be a safe school for my kids? And, you know, do I prefer sending them to a place that's safe, but maybe not as prestigious, over a place that's very prestigious, but where they will have to walk around looking down at one when they go around campus and rush to their dorms so they don't have to confront anything that's very ugly there.
So, Judy, I guess I'll bid you farewell the way we do in Israel these days. Stay safe.
Thanks, you too, Allison.
And that wraps things up for Haaretz Weekly. Thanks to my guests, Professor Dov Waxman and to Judy Maltz, and to my producer and editor, Nara Malkin. I'm Allison Kaplan-Summer, and until next week, shalom from Tel Aviv.
Thank you.